This is the best of rain for January 11, 2019. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. For the next 4-plus months, we're going to dig up some of Hap's fave productions going back to this one, Volume 1, Number 23 from 1987, during what was known then as the RP Report. The subject is Part 1 of Hap's first interview with Carol Perry, WB2MGP. She's this week's subject for Best of Rain.
Each fall, more than a million youngsters trudge back to public schools in New York City. 1,800 of those to Rocco Loring Intermediate School 72. And of those, 350 enroll in a class that will change many of their lives. The class is amateur radio. The teacher is Carol Perry, WB2MGP. A resident of Staten Island, New York, Perry has been teaching full-time since 1981 and is a former vice president of Avant-Garde Devices, Incorporated. A radio amateur since 1975, Perry received the coveted Radio Amateur of the Year plaque awarded at the 1987 Dayton Hamvention in Dayton, Ohio. This is part one of this very special interview with a very special lady. What started as a two-month experiment in 1981 has now blossomed into a full-time program for Carol Perry. She begins this interview now with a description of her amateur radio course and the concept behind it.
Well, the philosophy of the course, as I teach it, is have fun. And having fun is not sitting and throwing spitballs at each other. We stressed this at the beginning. The material is 80% of the novice program. And not everybody in my program is going to be invited to or have the privilege to take the license exam at the end. That's a special treat, and it has nothing to do with the grade that's given for the program. The course is open to children of all backgrounds and all abilities. I do not get selected children in the program. I get everybody. And when I say everybody, I mean of every conceivable description, including non-English-speaking children, are in my program. And the idea is just to expose them to 80% of the novice material so that they get to see there is this incredible hobby out there and to be aware of all the skills and all the different adventures that you can have with this hobby. And then I selectively choose out of that group who I would deem would be a good candidate for the license itself at the end. And those kids put forth that little extra effort themselves to fill in the gaps that we don't cover in the curriculum.
What if someone who you do not choose does want to pursue the license? Do you help them anyway?
Oh, absolutely. I'm not one of those people who has lunch. My day is devoted for the kids, and if they choose to come to see me during a lunch period, that's where that extra time is given. Or after school, we have an ability to stay there for a couple of hours after school sometimes. So anyone who's got the determination and who I feel will be a responsible addition to the hobby, I will certainly help any way I can to get into it, and we provide them with the means for upgrading at this point now at the school.
Tell me about the means by which they can upgrade.
Okay, well, I am a very firm believer in tapping on the resource of retired hams. And I convinced them several years ago that here I've got hundreds of licensed novices coming through the ranks, and they're all gung-ho, they're all hyped up and highly motivated with no place to go. I can't deal with hundreds at one time once they're through the program. So what we did was I talked them into coming back to the school in the evenings at first to try it out as a pilot program again. And we had five retired hams who came to the school in the evenings, and we publicized and opened up to the community. Any community member, parent, sibling, or child who wished to go from novice through the upgrade setup to come back to the school in the evening for a course as part of the adult education program in the school. And it was successful enough that we've now run it 2 years in a row. And this is done purely voluntarily by the ham friends of mine who come back in the evenings.
And what is the name of the school where you teach?
Rocco, R-O-C-C-O, Laurie, L-A-U-R-I, Intermediate School 72.
How large is it, and is it a mixture of all races and creeds and so forth?
Yes, the school itself is the largest intermediary school on Staten Island. We have 1,800 students in the school population and a teaching staff of 110. The neighborhood that it's in is predominantly a middle-class neighborhood, but children are bused in from surrounding areas, So we have a little of everything. In fact, somebody figured out last year that we had 80 different nationalities represented in the school, including non-English speaking children, who I get into my program. And I might mention that I also get children who are mainstreams from the special education classes into my class. That means children who have either severe emotional, physical, or learning disabilities. They participate in my program as well.
How are you able to divide your time up so much when you have such extreme levels of learning ability and learning disabilities?
Well, this, again, it gets back to teaching methodology. You use every trick in the book, and ham radio, fortunately, probably more than any other hobby I could think of, affords me the opportunity to bring very unique experiences into the classroom, hands-on experience, extraordinary experiences, and really adventures that the kids would never have a chance to develop in any other part of their school careers as of now. And so I play on that and make it be a treat to come into my program so that the discipline becomes a secondary issue, and the main issue is how to get the best skills developed in the course of the program and to keep the interest level and the motivational high. And a key to that is keeping my own interest level high. And what I do is each term we really get involved in different activities so that I myself don't get tired or bored with the redundancy of the same material.
You mentioned you have some gifted students as well as some learning disabled or emotionally disturbed students.
Yes.
Are you able to get the gifted students to help the slower ones so that they all can work together so you don't get them bored in the process?
Oh, yes. We have buddy systems, especially for the code practice where we do that. And I've got several generations now through the school between 6th and 8th grade. We encounter some siblings, some older brothers or sisters who have already been through the program, many of whom have been licensed. And what I do is I call upon them to come back either as guests or as part of the program to help with the kids. So in addition to having me there and guest speakers who are ham friends of mine, I also bring in children who have already been through the program to help out the other kids. And I would always, of course, pair up somebody with a little bit more expertise with somebody who might need the extra help. So the buddy system is all part of it also.
You're listening to the RP Report. We'll be right back after a pause for a station ID.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
This is the RP Report. I'm Katie Sinan, RP in Chicago. Now, back to part one of our interview with New York City school teacher Carol Perry, WB2MGP, recipient of the Radio Amateur of the Year plaque awarded at the 1987 Dayton Hamvention. Do you find any more or less disciplinary problems in your classroom?
I can make the statement, and my administration will back me up 100%, that in 6 years of teaching this program, I have never encountered any kind of a severe discipline problem. It does not exist within this program.
Is that because of the way you teach it, or just the pure subject and the challenge of amateur radio?
Well, truthfully, it's got to be a little of both. I would have control over the kids no matter what subject I taught, but ham radio gives me the perfect motivational tool to have kids sitting at the end of their seats and to try to impress me with their own maturity and sense of responsibility, because I stress that that's a requirement for my giving them the license exam at the end. So they go out of their way to impress me with how mature and responsible they in fact are, to be able to handle the equipment and to be able to conduct themselves properly on the radio.
What's the size of your average class?
35.
Do you find the girls do basically just as well as the boys?
I'm so happy you asked me that question. The first time in the classroom when I get a new group, I get equal numbers of boys and girls in the program. And the first time they come in, I give them an overall view of what to expect that term and what I expect from them. And before one of them can sit and raise a hand and say it to me, I anticipate what they're thinking about. And so I always say, now, girls, you're probably sitting there saying, well, this all sounds pretty good to me, but there's no way I could ever be able to do this because, after all, I am female. And then I smile and I say, but you can't use that excuse here with me because, take a look, here I am. You can't say that to me. And, of course, they all smile because that's exactly what they're sitting there and thinking. So, in a way, it's good that I am female because it provides a role model that's sorely needed in this hobby.
So what you're doing, of course, is not only giving them something different in the classroom study-wise, but also just in some personal development and personal growth.
Oh, absolutely. No question about it. There are many, many documented cases of kids who have never succeeded at anything at all in school who have come through this program with flying colors. And even if they don't get licensed, they all leave feeling better about themselves than when they walked in. Because I make sure that they do. No matter what it is, I will find some skill that that child will succeed at and feel good about. Maybe it's only something as simple as doing the best design of his own QSL card that we make a big fuss over. Each kid succeeds at some area, and I make sure that I find enough areas within the context of ham radio for each one to have some success at. And it's not geared only toward getting a license. It's geared for a unique experience in life and seeing what other people are out there doing.
Do the students sign up for this class?
At the beginning, it was that way, and what happened was there were just too many to accommodate, so it now became part of the regular minor track program, so that just about every kid going through the school will eventually pass through the program. It's a regular shop course that everyone in the school, or most of them in the school, will take. The class size just became so enormous that I sit there with 40 kids in some cases, and it's a little bit unreasonable. So most of the kids will, in fact, go through my program.
And what percentage of those kids become licensees, would you say?
I would say 75%. And out of that, we've got a 25% group that upgrades.
You're dealing with 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. What percentage of those have really been burned out already on learning?
That's a very severe problem. Most of the kids are overstimulated and underworked. And many of them are, in fact, burned out by the time they hit the 6th grade. I would say probably 35 to 40% of them have had very negative experiences along the way, or couldn't care less, or are more interested in outside activities rather than in school, and very rarely have a positive attitude toward teachers or school in general, and certainly don't like to do any kind of work, anything that requires working. And what I tell them is, if you have that attitude, then I would refer you to CB, where you don't have to do anything but be alive and breathing to get on that. But if you want something that's special, like most good things in life, you have to work for it. And there's just no other way that this is going to happen except by your putting the time in on the code and on the theory and learning what has to be done. There is no other way to do it except that way. And so they either make up their minds to go along with this or hold off a little bit and wait to see sort of what the lay of the land is, if in fact I'm telling them what the truth of the matter is. And they do soon see that unless they do put a certain amount of work into it, it's just not going to happen for them. You can't sit down and play Mozart until you learn the notes first. Again, it's all the rapport and the trust that what I'm telling them can be done, and it can be done by them, because the beauty of this course is that I can tell them we are all starting out equal. There's nobody who comes into my room ahead of anybody else. No matter what you did anyplace else, it doesn't matter. Nobody walking in that room knows Morse code the first time. So it's your chance for the first time to be on equal footing with your peers. And that's a big selling number.
This has been part one of a two-part interview with Carol Perry, WB2MGP, who teaches amateur radio full-time at Rocco Laurie Intermediate School 72 in New York City. Next time, Perry will explain how she persuaded her school's administration to give amateur radio a try. She will also describe the manual she has prepared with which even novice teachers can teach amateur radio. I'm Hap Holly, KC9RP in Chicago.
That concludes the first of a two-part interview with Carol Perry, WB2MGP, whom Hap Holly, KC9RP, first interviewed in 1987, the same year she was named the Dayton Hamvention Ham of the Year. We'll resume their conversation next time here on The Best of Rain. Copyright 1990-2019 Rain. All rights reserved. These The Best of Rain update Saturdays on therainreport.com and can be heard on WTWW shortwave out of Lebanon, Tennessee on 5.085 MHz Saturdays around 7:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. Now, for all those connected with the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73. Keep on hamming!